If you are looking to continue developing your coaching skills or have a new coach that you'd like to train or onboard, check out our upcoming activity coaching clinics. We are hosting both our basics and advanced clinics every Monday for our basics clinic and Tuesday for our advanced clinic from 1:30 to 3 Central Standard Time. It runs October 2nd through November 6th, and you can learn more and register at heatherpriceconsulting.com. Hey everyone, welcome to Activity Coaching Conversations with Heather
and Sabina,
where we discuss coaching strategies for the overachievers, the slow starters, and everyone in between. We're going to share everything we know about instilling early success habits, the science behind activity, and how to build a values-based, FR-centered coaching philosophy. Activity Coaching Conversations is all about balancing accountability with the art and science of coaching. Hi, everyone. I am so stinking excited about our conversation today. Jenna's already laughing. In over 50 episodes, this is our first one where we are actually hosting a recruiter, which is really cool, and where we are going to be digging into the impact of recruiting on activity coaching. And Sabina, I don't know quite honestly how we have gotten this far into these podcasts without doing this topic. It's going to be a good one. It's something that we probably should have done quite some time ago, and I'm just really psyched for it. So our guest joining us for our discussion today is Miss Jenna Hessen. Welcome.
Thanks, Heather.
Good to have you. Let's do a quick introduction. Jenna Hessen Pompasini, right? New last name, has been with Kevin Miller's network office in Pittsburgh for coming up on 7 years now. She is the director of selection at the network office and is passionate about introducing the right person to this career that could change their life. Jenna holds the life, accident, and health life health license, her SIE, and is currently studying for the Series 6. She's a proud graduate of the 2021-22 cohort for the Women's Leadership Program, or WLP, as many people know it. She's previously served on the annual meeting planning committee for our recruiting sessions, the co-creation pod for the selection experience guide, and is a current member of the Women's Events Advisory Council. Clearly, she loves giving back to the NM system. Jenna won the Recruiter of the Year for Category 2 in 2019, and she just got married in August of last year to her husband, Aldo, who is an advisor in Pittsburgh. I am so happy you agreed to join us. Thanks, Jenna.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you both. I'm really excited.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and dig in. I want to start with a little backdrop and to help set the stage. So a couple months ago, Jenna was in our activity coaching clinic and as a recruiter, right? And she was wanting to expand her horizons and get more into development and learn more about coaching. So she was in our clinic. And after one of the sessions, she called me and said, I want to have a little discussion about how we can help our FRs be more successful in general. And, you know, we were talking a lot about expectations, actually. But in the end, what it really led to was a discussion around selection. And Sabina, this resonates with me. You have said this since the day I met you, probably 25 years ago, is you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Right.
And yep. So we used to say you can't take a duck to eagle school.
Yes, exactly. So much of the impact and I guess the influence of the type of people that we're coaching is who we have to coach with to begin with. And that starts in the selection process. So here we are ready to have an awesome conversation. I also want to share one other recent story as some backdrop. I am currently doing a program or hosting a program called the Apprentice Program, where individuals who have been in my national study groups are able to shadow some of my activity coaching calls. And recently, I did an introductory call with a new advisor that I'd be coaching, and I had an activity coach from the system sit in and join me. And as we were going through our introductory call, there were so many red flags that just kept popping up. So as I'm talking to this or listening to this candidate, tell me a little bit about his background and where he came from and why Northwestern Mutual. I had asked him, you know, well, tell me a little bit about why you're with Northwestern Mutual. And his response was something along the lines of, well, there wasn't a whole lot out there, and this is the offer that I got. And I had to keep my jaw from physically dropping. You know, we were on Zoom, and I didn't want him to see my response. And there were a couple other red flags throughout this 30-minute meeting that I had with him where I went, this guy is going to be very difficult to coach. And when we hung up the call and I was debriefing with the other activity coach that had been shadowing me, she immediately said, this is really interesting. I'm wondering how he got through the selection process. And that's really why we're here today. I was a recruiter for 2 years. I recognize it is one of the hardest jobs in the system. It really is. And we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know who's going to make it and who's not. But there are things that we can do, I think, that will help us influence who we bring in to be advisors. And that's what we want to talk about today. So, Jenna, as you are starting to get more involved in the coaching and development side of things, what are you learning about recruiting advisors in general?
Yeah. So I think recruiting is hard and development is hard, right? So they're both very difficult. So we've always known this, but it truly takes an extremely specific person to do this and to do it well and to be successful, right? Which is why our goals are so high. So we're keeping 70 to 80 initial interviews a month. Ideally, 4 people are going to accept from that group. The good news is our accept to contract ratio is higher than home office right now. We're at about 50%. So we keep that activity and keep those goals in front of us. There's a great chance we're going to hit that goal. But I think a theme here is that really the patterns and habits don't change. So we really focus on what we see or how we experience this candidate in the selection experience is how they're going to show up in onboarding. It's how they're going to show up in their first 6 months. And then after that, there shouldn't be any surprises. So we're really just learning to kind of take a pause and say, okay, this is the best version of this candidate that we're going to see in selection. And really just focusing on how are we experiencing them? If they have some mess ups in the selection experience, right? Are we really sure that we want this person to come in and activity coach them, right? And onboard them and get them through training, because it takes so much time, energy, effort, and money to get one person, right, up and running. So I think it's just more of hitting pause and picking up on those red flags or those bad habits early on.
And so much easier said than done. I want to recognize that, right? I mean, they're on their best behavior when they're in the selection process, so they're going to say all the right things. Have you changed your approach at all on your ideal candidate in general, I guess, but also since you've started getting more involved in development, has that changed?
Yeah, that's a great question. I definitely wouldn't say we changed the approach on who is the ideal candidate. The qualities have stayed the same, right? We want the track record of success. We want them to have that grit, the entrepreneurial mindset, the ability to overcome adversity and overcome rejection. Great connector, right? The ability to get those favorable introductions. All those things stay the same. But I do think that we are getting better at picking up on earlier in selection if they don't have those qualities, right? So digging a little bit deeper in the initial interview, in the in-depth, especially we really extended our time for that in-depth interview from 60 minutes to 90 minutes, which we can talk about later. But the approach on the ideal candidate hasn't changed. But I think just being able to be a better listener, because for me, just seeing on the activity coaching side of things down the line, it's okay, how is this going to show up later on? And just shadowing, you know, I'm starting to shadow some of Lainey's meetings and really just kind of seeing firsthand, like, oh my gosh, these are things we should have picked up on with not everybody, with some people early on. So how do we just, you know, do a better job of breaking those things down?
But that is the unique perspective that I wish every recruiter could have. And maybe that's a new best practice moving forward for the people that you recruit to come sit in on some of the activity coaching meetings and see how they show up. I'm sure there are some learnings there, and we're going to talk a little bit about that later in some of our other questions. How do we come together, both teams and both sides, recruiters and developers, to try to learn from one another? But Sabina, I'm curious from your perspective in all of your years coaching, are there one or two things when you think about the ideal candidate that they need to have that will help their odds of being successful?
Yeah, I would say energy. They have to have a lot of energy and capacity, right? Because this isn't an 8-to-5 job. It's not a, you know, leave the work at, you know, at the office when you go home. I mean, you're building something that you're going to own for the duration of your career. So you have to have some energy, and you have to, you know, you have to excel at prospecting. So that's one of the things. And I think that's hard to test for, right? Prospecting is hard to test for, but that's really, I think that's what it is. You know, because when you think about people showing up in the recruiting process, I think you have to almost take a step back and look at how they, not just what they say, but how they behave. Are they late? Do they, how's their follow up? How's their receptivity to any ideas that you have and feedback that you give? How do they take criticism and so forth? Because those things all are going to show up on the other side.
When I think about that question, I know that what the 22, 23 year olds right out of college don't have, without internship experience, don't obviously have the best retention rate. I would say, you know, anybody in that age group, or even, I mean, I don't know, I feel like a 23 year old is technically like a 28 year old. It seems like they're still living at home when they're 29, 30 years old, but they have to have some skin in the game. They have to have some financial responsibilities. You know, if they don't have those financial responsibilities, there isn't a whole lot to motivate them, to be quite honest. And I'm not saying everybody's motivated by money, but they do need to have some kind of financial responsibility, some bills to pay, something along those lines. At least that's what I have experienced. And then oddly, this is a weird theme I'm seeing, and I don't know, I think it's happened since COVID, quite honestly. I'm seeing a lot of teachers come into this business. And I've probably coached at least a dozen teachers in the last 12 to 18 months, and maybe one or two have done a great job. The others, I don't know if it's that they're running from something versus going to something, but it's just a trend I have seen. And I don't necessarily think that teaching necessarily applies to sales, right? They want to come in and they want to educate people, which is great. They want to educate people on financial planning and financial concepts, and that's great. But so much of this business is out prospecting and fishing, right? Hunting.
And that brings another thought. It makes me think of another thing on top of your question from before, which is they have to be able to influence people to action. Like they have to be able to exert some influence over people and not feel like they're going to be the pushy salesperson. I hear that all the time. I don't want to be the pushy salesperson. I'm like, you have to be very purposeful. You have to reframe it.
So Jenna, let's change gears a little bit. We're talking a little bit about the type of candidate that we are looking for. What are some of the questions that you would ask now that perhaps you weren't asking before you got involved in activity coaching?
Yeah. So I think a big thing for me is really digging in and finding out the person's why, their conviction for, you know, why did you apply? Why are you interested in speaking with us? Why Northwestern Mutual? So we've always asked those questions and found out those things, but I think it's taking it a level deeper in their why and in their conviction, because if they don't have a really solid or strong why or passion for this industry, there's a very slim chance that they're going to either A, continue on or last longer than, right, that 6 month, 1 year period. So just digging in a little bit deeper on that. And I think going through activity coaching has honestly helped me be a better recruiter in the selection experience. I think it's helped me be more direct and feeling good about being direct. Not that I wasn't before, but now it's like, okay, I feel 150% way more confident in being upfront and direct with somebody. Even though, like, right, we like them, they're a great person, that's awesome, but can they do the job? So it's starting to dig deeper into that.
I have a follow-up question to that, which is how often when you're digging into people's why do you hear, I want to help people?
Almost every conversation I have.
Yep.
And how do you respond to that?
Depending on the type of candidate, if they were referral, if they were internet, how they got introduced to us, I usually say, tell me more, because I think in every job, in every industry, you could always tie it back to I'm helping somebody. But in what way? Tell me what's going to be most impactful to you. And something that I think we started to dig deeper on here is how they handle autonomy, how they handle their calendar management. I think, and this might not be a question for the initial, maybe more so for the in-depth, but okay, you know, candidate, if you have 6 meetings scheduled, let's say all of them cancel, your day blows up, what do you do? Because we are now experiencing some people, well, my meeting's canceled, I went home and kind of hung out the rest of the day. And it's like, okay, that's a problem. That's not good. So how could we have picked up on that earlier? And then I think another one is just really digging into their belief and conviction in our products and services. I had a great I was having a great conversation with this candidate maybe a month or so ago. Very intelligent guy, a lot of great experience. And then we started digging into, right, our products and services, how our advisors work with clients, and what we're doing, right? Life, disability, long-term care insurance, and then on the investment side of things. And then he said, yeah, like the investments sound great, but I'm not passionate at all about life insurance. And I said, okay, that's going to be a problem. So this isn't going to be a good fit. So I think digging into their belief in our products, because they can say, I want to come here and help people all day. I'm excited about meeting with people and setting up those meetings. But if you don't believe in life insurance, like this isn't going to go well.
I guarantee, Sabina, you and I are on the same wavelength most of the time. And I bet where you were going with your question about why, you know, what is your why? Jenna, like you said, everybody says they want to make an impact. And there's 100 different ways to make an impact. And this is a really hard way. So why this over something else? You have to have a passion for financial planning, a passion for the product, you know, some connection to it, because it's really hard. And if you don't have a really strong connection with your why, you're probably better off to go make an impact some other way. The other thing that you mentioned, which I loved, Jenna, and want to follow up on a little bit, is the belief and conviction. This is where I find the market surveys are underutilized and so crucial. I heard recently, and I don't know if this is true, but I heard recently that the home office is actually changing the recommendation. It was 15, and I heard now they're saying, well, if you do a minimum of 3, and I almost was like, what? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So yeah. I am coaching.
There's been a bunch of changes with the market surveys.
Yep, and whatever the changes are, I'm not, you know, a part of those conversations, but I do have a lot of belief in how helpful and impactful those are and selecting the right people, the market surveys anyway are. I'm coaching a woman right now who's really struggling with prospecting. I'm only in my second week coaching her, but in our third meeting, when we were talking about prospecting, she point blank told me I would never give anybody referrals. And I went, whoa, okay. Did you complete any market surveys? And she said, well, if somebody asked me for names, I wouldn't give anybody. That's what the market surveys are for, right? You're supposed to ask people for introductions to other people and then call people you don't know that you were referred to in the first few market surveys. So if I just think it's underutilized, and if you're not using market surveys, please do and use as many as you can. It helps.
It does.
So what's your experience with that?
So we've had a lot of conversations around the market surveys, the DYM. I think the home office actually, we gave it a facelift, right? The survey workbook and the actual exercise, it's the same concept, same content. It just looks a little bit differently and we're presenting it differently with the same intention behind it. So I'll show you guys that at a later date. But we have started to, I would say, really challenge our level one candidates. And when I say level one, I mean probably a recent grad, not a lot of work experience, no internship experience. We're challenging them. We have started to, even after, like if we feel good, if they've done maybe 5 to 10 surveys, we're still continuing that through onboarding for that right person that needs, that doesn't have that strong of a market. If everything else is lining up, we extend that offer, they accept. If we don't feel strongly that they have, right, those 250 plus connections, we're going to keep challenging them to do more market surveys, and that carries through selection into onboarding and even thereafter. Now, for a high-level career changer, right, that's been in the workforce, you know, working for quite some time, they have a really strong market, they have 500-plus connections, we're not going to do that with that type of candidate, if that makes sense. But I do agree that market surveys, they are designed to weed those candidates out, that it's not going to be a good fit.
Well, and I think what they do is they give you a little mini experience of what you're going to deal with all day, every day, once you get out of training. I mean, that's probably the closest to the real world that you're going to get. And so I feel like everybody should do at least 10, because you're going to test their prospecting. I mean, it's like a very compact way to experience the career.
Right.
Okay. This is kind of a tricky question, because again, this comes down to not having a crystal ball, right? But how do you know, or how can you tell when someone is being honest in the selection process? How are you testing for that? And the reason I'm asking is we've all had that experience where somebody comes in. My guess is they did not tell the candidate that I talked to you about early on at the beginning of this podcast. I'm sure he didn't come into the selection process and say, I don't know, this is the best thing I could find. So yeah, sign me up. So how do you test for that? What are you looking for?
I think that's an interesting question. And I think, and I keep saying this and going back to the theme of the best version we're going to get of this person is in the selection process. So we want to make sure it's, you know, there's no loose ends there, but the patterns rarely ever change. So I think testing for honesty, I think it's more of an art of reading somebody. And I think that comes just with experience. I know when I first started, when I was 2 months in as a recruiter, I had no clue. I thought everybody could do this. I was like, this, everyone's the best fit. This is awesome. And then you quickly learn that, like, oh my gosh, this, this is going down a bad path. But that comes with experience. I think it's being able to read body language, read their facial expressions. Some of those soft skills in interviewing, right? Being able to, you know, hear their tone fluctuate. And I think it's the same thing for the advisors and the fact finder. Usually, you know, we ask the background questions, right? In that in-depth interview, like, hey, we do a candidate application. There is a background check, obviously, coming into this industry. Is there anything that would prevent us from moving forward here? Felonies, misdemeanors, whatever the case is. And I think that makes people nervous. Mostly everyone is like, nope, I'm good. And then not for everybody, but for some people, things come up later on in that candidate application. So then we have to be the ones to have a serious conversation with them and say, hey, we asked you about this in the experience. Here's what came up on the background check. Let's have an open and honest discussion about it. So I don't know if there's truly like a, hey, this is how we test for honesty, but I do think it's more of a soft skill. It's more of an art and being able to read somebody. And I always say that gut intuition is never wrong. So it's really just all about that intuition, I think.
Sabina, anything you would add there?
Well, I think it's also some consistency, right? Like consistency from interview to interview and then their behavior. I'm always looking for inconsistencies. You know, people tell you one thing, but they behave a different way. So that's part of it too. But that's all part of making sure you notice it. And to your point, Jenna, that you have the intuition to pick up on that.
Okay, one more question, and this will be kind of a fun one. We have probably all, any recruiter has probably had that experience of looking back and thinking, oh yeah, I think I probably saw that, right? Looking back, it was there, I just didn't know it, or shoot, I should have seen that coming. How can recruiters or coaches learn from those examples from past and move forward into making that an improvement for the future?
I love that. I think all teams go through that, right? We've gone through it multiple times. I know every single team across the country experiences this, and that's normal, but it's okay. How are we going to improve and get better? Because there has been a few situations, right, where again, we like the person, everything looks great on paper, they've had a great process, but there might be X, Y, and Z of, okay, this might come up later on. I think our team has done a really good job, I'd say in the past 6 to 12 months, just having some open and honest conversations in our Monday morning leadership meeting and really going through and digging deeper candidate by candidate and saying, okay, let's be honest with ourselves. Yes, we like them. Yes, we want to be their friend. Yes, we would introduce them to our best client, right? But here's some things that we've picked up on that is not going to serve this person well once they get here. And it's hard because we have the recruiting goals to hit. We have, you know, we're running towards numbers, and it's kind of just slowing down and hitting pause and really reminding ourselves that at the end of the day, these are people's lives that we're dealing with. I think it's a lot more challenging to have somebody come here and you see them go into debt and you see them not being struggling to pay their bills, whatever the case is. I think that's way harder to learn on the back end in activity coaching and training than it is to lose somebody in the selection process. So I think just keeping, you know, reminding ourselves of that has been what we've been trying to focus on.
You make a great point about the pressure on recruiting, right? And it gets more as you get later in the game, right? So somebody that you, when you've got a month left to recruit people, somebody that you might not have recruited in February, suddenly you're like, well, there's enough good things, you know? So it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of pressure.
Sure. And we have taken chances. There are candidates that we have taken a chance on and they come here and they perform. And there are candidates that we've taken a chance on and they don't make it 2-3 weeks, you know, past training. So I think we've done a better job slowing down to get more ahead and slowing down to speed up, if that makes sense.
Makes total sense.
I think so much of it comes with experience too, Jenna, and I'm sure you can relate to this. What you alluded to it that earlier on, there were a couple people you selected because you thought everybody could do it, right? So you probably selected very different at the end of your first year than you did your first couple months when you started as a recruiter. I remember my first year in recruiting, I think I only, I recruited 12 candidates probably. This was back in the, you know, late 90s, and they did okay. And then the next year, I actually recruited half the number. I recruited many fewer reps than I did the previous year, but those fewer reps outproduced the number of reps that I had the last year because I got it. It took me a year, but I got it and I knew who I was looking for. Now, obviously the goal is quality and quantity. If I could have recruited the same number and the same quality, that would have been awesome. But the whole point is just, you know, the more experience you have, you learn how to, what you're looking for. And to your previous point also, Jenna, you, even if you are a new recruiter, get together with your development team, ask questions, learn. You know, you're having that weekly meeting. I would encourage everybody to have, you know, we take our car in every year for a tune-up. We take our bodies in every year for a physical, right? Let's have a tune-up of our recruiting selection and development. And let's review all of the candidates we've brought in the last year. And let's go through them with a fine-tooth comb. Who left and why? What were the signs that we missed? What were the, you know, let's look at our successful people. What are the characteristics that they have that are really helping them succeed? And how do we make sure our recruiters are looking for that? I just think time to reflect is so important in all areas, and we can learn a ton from that.
I totally agree. And that's something that our team, you know, or our downtown network office and then our district offices as well, we've created, Lainey and I last year worked on an agency like fallout analysis, right? So every team at the end of the recruiting year, we're looking at that and it's in everybody's face and saying, okay, let's go one by one. You know, how many not right nows did we have on the right choice assessment? How many, did they do the market surveys? Did they get referrals on the market surveys? All of those things really 9 out of 10 times align. And then we say, okay, would we hire this person again? Would we extend that offer? Sometimes it's yes, sometimes it's no. It just really, I do think it's a good exercise. And if you're not doing that with your teams already, I really encourage you to get together and do that and have that meeting time to reflect and go through and look at that fallout analysis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One thing that I have also seen other offices doing is bringing the recruiting team together with the onboarding and the development team during the onboarding phase. So here are the candidates that are coming through the process. Here is why we selected them. Here is their CP. What are you experiencing in the onboarding process? Well, that's funny because here's what we're experiencing and kind of comparing notes. And I think that's important because you have to remember that the onboarding process is still post-selection. You have not offered them an opportunity, right? Or you haven't turned them full-time yet. And you can still say no. And I know that's so hard. You've worked so hard to get that candidate. And it's tough to get somebody that far into the process only to make a decision. But like you said, this is their livelihood. If you're seeing signs that they're not going to make it, it is helping the agency and it's helping the candidate by making the right choice for both parties involved. And it's not too late to make that decision.
I agree. And I think it's a disservice to them, right? If we see the signs and we say, hey, we can't let you continue and go further, here's why. And sometimes we'll find another role for that person in the agency or something that's going to fit them better. You know, I think that's something that we try to do for the right person. Because oftentimes it's, I love you guys. I love Northwestern Mutual. I love what we do, but I can't do it, right? So then it's, okay, well, how do we keep them here in the organization if they are a great culture ad? So.
And also, if you think about recruiting is very much like a rep's job. Sometimes I know our recruiter here in St. Louis would keep in touch with people for 2 and 3 years at a time. So maybe they are the right person, but they don't want to come in or they're not financially viable right now or, you know, whatever. She would keep in touch with them and maybe 2 years later, they would be ready to make a change, you know? So there's a lot of mirroring between the recruiter's job. I mean, you have to get referrals, you have to make phone calls, you have to set interviews, you know, it's very similar.
It's really a parallel of a role. So I agree.
One final question. I would love to hear your perspective as a recruiter going through the Activity Coaching Clinic. What would be your thoughts for other recruiters? How was it helpful? Was it a valuable use of time? Tell me more about that.
Yes. Oh my goodness. It was a fabulous experience, honestly, because I mean, for my own personal story, I mean, I've been here for 7 years. I've always been involved, right? And have meetings with Megan and with Lainey and hearing how everyone's going in development and our Monday morning meeting. But it was really eye-opening to go through and see what the structure of the activity coaching meeting is, what, you know, the science behind the numbers. I think that was huge. And I would encourage you, if you are in a recruiting role and you have an interest or the capacity and the ability to go through the activity coaching clinic and take on that role, it's only going to make you a better recruiter. It's only going to give you, I believe, more success while you're speaking with candidates in selection and giving the candidates a better experience overall too. So I can't say enough good things. I'm excited to start in activity coaching here once our April class wraps up. I'm going to be taking on a few of those folks. So I'm ready to rock and roll. But like I said, I think it's only going to help you in your role as a recruiter and make you that much better.
Oh, well, we're so glad you joined. It led to this awesome conversation that we've been having. So yes, thank absolutely. You for being our guest today. You're welcome back anytime. And good luck in your activity coaching journey ahead of you. So
thank you both so much. This was great. Thank you for having me and hopefully to be back soon.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us today for Activity Coaching Conversations with Heather
and Sabina. If you found value in this conversation, please like, share, and leave a review in your favorite podcast app.
And to learn more about our activity coaching clinics and how to hone your skills, visit heatherpriceconsulting.com. Link is in the show notes.
Thanks again for listening. Keep learning and growing.